You're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, here in the liberal land of long beards, lattes, and lutefisk. And now here are your hosts, Doug Padgett, Brett Johnson, and Hunter Hawes.
And you indeed are listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Mm-hmm.
Three various special initials on the title of our show, if you haven't figured that out over the past few months. Yes, exactly. Minnesota Progressive Repartee. You do the math on what those initials come out to. It is Brett and Hunter hosting the Repartee today. And there's another radio station out there that is going through what they call a pledge drive right now, where you can get yourself a free tote bag if you donate money, which I think you were talking about this yesterday, Hunter. I mean, I like the organization. Well, we'll just go out and say it. NPR, Minnesota Public Radio. I like what they do. They have a great news department. But, man, some of those sponsorship drives, that's really what they are. They're not even pledge drives. They're essentially looking for sponsorships. I mean, you listen to all of those programs, and it's always programming brought to you by so-and-so,
mm-hmm.
which is fine, but they still kind of, you know, put themselves off as being a publicly funded, well, they are publicly funded, but a non-commercial radio station, even though they've kind of essentially moved in that direction. But you and Eric got into a little conversation about that yesterday and the lack of value you sometimes find in those old tote bags.
Yeah, absolutely. And they really guilt you into mm-hmm. getting one of those tote bags.
What I notice with those drives as well is that it's always, you know, we'll stop doing this if you donate
yeah.
enough money.
Desperation.
We'll stop. Which I don't buy at all, because they're going to be doing this drive for – they already have it probably set in stone for the amount of time they're going to be doing the drive. It's not like they're all of a sudden going to say, oh, we met our goal. I guess we're going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, to steal the old Herman Cain line, I don't have facts to back this up, so I don't know if it actually works that way. I'm guessing it does, is that they probably have a set amount of time that they're doing those drives. But that's what you're finding over there on the other NPR. And we did get an emailer saying, well, hey, don't go after those guys. They're a nice organization. I know. I get that. We're just kind of poking fun at them.
Light ribbing.
Light ribbing. Yeah, you got to have a little sense of humor about it. Like I said, I think they do a fine job reporting the news, but yeah, it's fun to have some poke a little fun at them, and I'd be just as happy if they were to poke some fun at us. In fact, mm-hmm. I'd be thrilled if they were to poke some fun at the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, maybe saying our repartee isn't so good. I'd love it if they did that. Maybe start a little rivalry with them, similar to how, if you've heard David Pakman and Sam Cedar having their own little rivalry over the backgrounds of their TV studios.
Yeah.
You can tune in and hear about that during Ring of Fire and the David Pakman Show, which you can hear weeknights here on AM 950. Love to get a little rivalry going with that, a little friendly rivalry.
Yeah, I've got a rivalry with Al Malberg, but
he's
no longer on the radio.
Hunter 1, Al 0.
Exactly.
Oh, man, we're not even going there. But I know you and Al are definitely not BFFs. But anyways, to a few people who emailed, yeah, we're not trashing them. We're just having a little fun with those guys. Again, they do a nice job reporting the news over there. One of the few organizations left in town that actually does report the news, just a straightforward read of the news. They don't put a conservative or a liberal bias or the one that more drives me nuts. Matt's talked about this too, the old, well, there's big political news. The state's on fire, so-and-so. But here's a puppy dog. Here's our latest puppy dog and rainbows and sunshine story. Nope, they actually do a nice job reporting the news over there. So what's ahead on our Minnesota Progressive Repartee for today? Well, coming up during the last segment of our show, Doug Padgett conducted an interview this morning with Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman. She's a rabbi with Temple Israel, and they have a big event coming up next Tuesday called Voices, where they bring in people, national figures, that generally have opposing political views, and they try to foster a nice conversation. In fact, you've probably heard some ads running over the past few days here on AM 950 promoting that event. So we're going to have more details on that event as Doug will be speaking with Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman. We'll have that towards the end of the show, probably around 4:45 or 4:50. Don't miss that as they dive into what it's like to actually have a nice dialogue between two people who do have politically opposing views. Also ahead on the show, we're going to take a closer look at the state budget, because if you look at the budget and we roughly have a disagreement between the DFL and the Republicans over a couple billion dollars in what's overall a $50 billion budget. But what overall actually is in that budget? Because I think it's easy to look at that from, you know, like a 10,000-foot view and not actually understand what's in that. So we're going to take a closer look at the Minnesota state budget and what some of the disagreements are about. But first, got to bring this up. I'm a little bummed about this because I am an avid biker. But with the construction of the Southwest LRT, the Southwest Light Rail Line that is running from Eden Prairie to downtown Minneapolis, the Cedar Lake Bike Trail is closed until the fall of 2021, which is basically between Hopkins right at 169 all the way to where the chain of lakes kind of start near Lake Bademakoska and Lake of the Isles, kind of in that area. So I am super bummed about that because I go on that trail all the time. I live in a southwestern suburb right now, and a lot of my friends live in the uptown area, so I always was able to cruise along that trail to go and see them, and now I have no idea what I'm going to do. So that trail is closed now for 2+ years. It's not going to open until the fall of 2021. And I don't even think that's the point when the light rail is supposed to open. That's at least how long they're going to have to close that trail. I don't think the light rail itself actually opens until 2023. But if you're someone who bikes and goes on the Cedar Lake Trail, which runs pretty much from Hopkins towards the chain of lakes, you're out of commission for another 2+ years. The detour they've posted is the North Cedar Lake Trail, which, as it says, runs a little bit north of there, but is a little bit more out of the way from where I usually like to go. Or the one I might try is Excelsior Boulevard. But either way, I'm bummed about that. Not sure what I'm going to do with my biking coming up this summer and next summer and the summer after that. I'm certainly in some trouble.
Yeah, that's a long time. And when does this go into effect?
Already did.
Oh, it did.
On Monday. Yeah.
Bummer.
Yeah. So fall of 2021. But in the long run, I guess it's a good thing to have that light rail train set up because that's going to be nice to be able to actually take a train from the southwest suburbs all the way to downtown Minneapolis.
Mm, absolutely.
The only beef I kind of have with this, and I know this is several years old, is that I'm not thrilled about the route they took in Minneapolis once the light rail gets there. I wish it would have actually run down where the Midtown Greenway is and then up Lindale Avenue. I think that was one of the original proposals. Instead, it's running along what's called the Kenilworth Trail, which basically runs between Lake Bademakoska and Lake of the Isles, I believe, which is not a very heavily populated area. I feel like they really missed the boat there, kind of not going through the Uptown and Eat Street area. But I guess cost-cutting is the reason why they had to do that. But that would have been – I think they would have had massive ridership if they had a light rail line running right through Uptown and the Midtown Greenway. But nope. Light rail's going to be going through that area, a little north of there in the Lake of the Isles area. And I think the opening date is set for like 2023 or 2024. But if you're a biker, well, you're out of commission for a few years now. So let's dive into the news of the day. Of course, we are just a few days from when state legislatures and the governor have to reach an agreement on a budget for the state of Minnesota. And just recently, as of about 3:30, I think they re-enter negotiations. They were, of course, negotiating late last night. They took a break, and now they are back in negotiations over what's going to be about a $50 billion budget. Originally, I think as of last week, they were within like $2 billion in terms of coming to agreement. Now I think they've gotten that down to about $700 million. So they're at least getting a little bit closer. But the question is, and I don't blame Republicans sometimes for asking this question. They say, $50 billion? What could you possibly be spending $50 billion on in the state of Minnesota? The budget goes up every year, which it has pretty much for the last 20 years or so. What the heck is actually in that state budget? And I took a closer look at it because a lot of times we hear from people who are conservatives or Republicans, they say, well, cut the welfare. Look at all the waste, fraud, and abuse we're seeing in welfare. Well, overall, if you look at the Minnesota state budget for fiscal year 2017, welfare actually only made up 9% of the total state budget. What actually makes up the majority of that approximately $45 to $50 billion budget, depending on what the agreement comes to later on this year, is that healthcare and education account for over half of Minnesota state budget. Healthcare accounts for approximately one-third, or 33%. Education, a little less than a quarter, 23%. So you do the math, that's about 56% of our budget. Now, if you sit there and think about that, why the costs would increase on those and why the budget overall increases, well, just think about your own health insurance and your own health care. That, of course, has exponentially been increasing for years and years and even decades. So that would kind of explain why our health care costs, and especially a program like MinnesotaCare, they, of course, are also going to see rising costs with the cost of health care. Education as well. Well, there's one little part in there that I would like to learn more about of the education funding. I'm fine with the K-12 funding because you see local districts, especially in rural Minnesota, that are struggling to fund their K-12 programs. That I get. But the one question I'd like to dive into maybe at a later date is college education funding, because, of course, for years we've seen the cost of higher education rise and rise and rise, and it's been interesting to try to look at, take a look at why the cost increases so much of higher education. That would be an interesting interview we can maybe do later on one of our Minnesota Progressive Repartee programs. By the way, phone lines are open if you'd like to talk with us, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So even though we do have what's going to be approximately a $50 billion state budget once we eventually come to an agreement, most of that goes to education and health care, not welfare programs. Again, that only makes up about 9% of our total state budget. Let's go to Gary in Minneapolis. He has some thoughts on the state budget. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I want to talk about the state budget. There's something that doesn't show in the budget that's really missing. About 40 years ever since Rod and Ronnie, both in Minnesota and nationally, tax cuts, tax giveaways to the wealthy. And student loan debt is atrocious. When I was out of high school, about 1964 and 5, $100 a quarter at the University of Minnesota. Books are about $4 a piece. They mark them up, too. It's all profiteering. And the kids are going bankrupt trying to get a decent education and a career. It's just ridiculous.
Thanks so much for the call there, Gary. Do appreciate that. And again, it's something that would be interesting to take a deeper look at. Why the cost of higher education has gone up so much? Obviously, some of that, some of those parts are a little more intuitive to see, like Gary was talking about the cost of books and getting some for-profit aspect going into the college industry, but would be something to take a deeper dive at on one of our future Minnesota Progressive Repartee programs. Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to continue taking a look at these state budget negotiations and get some updates on some issues at the legislature that have kind of been flying a little bit below the radar as they've been negotiating this overall state budget. We'll take a look at that up next here on Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Brett and Hunter.
This is Nick Schrock with Nick Slavic Painting and Restoration, and I'm painting at AM 950 today, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
The Minneapolis Farmers Market has the best selection of plants for your gardens, the freshest produce, meats, and farmstead goods. You'll find meat vendors, some homestead vendors, and greenhouse vendors in the early part of spring. Plus, there will be fresh produce when the weather gets warmer. The Hennepin County Government Center Market is open Tuesdays. The Nicollet Mall Market is open on Thursdays. And the 312 East Lindell Market is open daily from 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. More details at mplsfarmersmarket.com.
On Tuesday, May 21st at 7:30 p.m., Temple Israel in Minneapolis invites you to join them for Voices 2019, their premier annual event. This year's voices will be Anna Navarro and Van Jones. Anna Navarro is a well-known Republican strategist, political analyst, and contributor to CNN and ABC's The View. And Van Jones is an activist, author, CNN political contributor, and host of CNN's Van Jones Show. This event will be moderated by Barack Obama-appointed ambassador to Morocco, Sam Kaplan. All are encouraged and welcome to attend this intriguing dialogue. General admission tickets are $50, and doors for general admission open at 7 p.m. Sponsorship opportunities are available for a private reception and dinner with the speakers prior to the program. Purchase a silver sponsorship to savor wine and hors d'oeuvres, or a gold sponsorship to enjoy wine and dinner with Anna and Van. Sponsorships start at just $500. Tuesday, May 21st is approaching quickly, and the event is selling out fast. Call and secure your seats today at 612-374-0342. Visit templeisrael.com/benefit for more information.
I'm Connie Burek, co-host of Awakened Living Infusion radio show. Join Michelle Kitzmiller and I as we focus on all aspects of health, wellness, spirituality, and growth from a mind, body, spirit, emotion perspective. Join us next week as we explore the many facets of mental health and begin to remove the stigma surrounding it. Join us for the Awakened Living Infusion Radio Show, Saturdays at 10 a.m. Let us share with you ways to infuse vitality into life.
This is Gary of Minneapolis on their Minnesota's Progressive Rapporteur. I got a question for you Trumpsters, or Trumpeteers, whatever you want to call yourselves. There's a billionaire that grabbed everything in the country and caused so much suffering and poverty. Why do you put him in power, a billionaire and a bunch of his cronies? You must be a bunch of masochists.
Letting Gary do a little double dick on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. I always love hearing that one, Hunter. How about you?
Yeah, it's triumphant.
Yeah, I love the music behind that as well. Gary's recorded some other promos for us. You and I just have not gotten around to editing those.
Right.
So maybe in the coming days you'll hear a new Gary in Minneapolis promo. I think Brad in Robbinsdale recorded a new one for us as well. By the way, if you'd like to leave us a bumper, you can always do so by calling 952-946-6205. Well, don't do it right now because we're live on the air. We don't want to mess up Hunter answering the phones right now, but leave us a voicemail after hours and we'll go ahead and try to put that together as a new bumper here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. So, continuing with news at the state legislature, well, negotiations have restarted in terms of trying to get that state budget put back together. They started restarted the negotiations about an hour ago at 3:30. But I want to look at some of the issues that the legislature has been dealing with that have kind of been flying under the radar over the past few weeks and especially in the past few days as they're really trying to nail down that budget number. And one of these is something Hunter and I were actually just talking about before we jumped on air with Matt's show, and that is the bill that is called Right to Repair, which is basically a bill, and Hunter, help me out with this if I'm not saying it right, but Right to Repair, and you interviewed a person with this as well, is basically something that would allow you to get your Apple iPhone repaired by someone essentially other than Apple and having an independent person repair your Apple iPhone, just using that as an example, by not having to necessarily use Apple products, or of course if you have a Droid or any other device. Is that essentially what it is?
Yeah, so right now they have kind of a monopoly on the parts, so to be able to sell any parts. Apple just doesn't release them to independent shops. So this bill would make that illegal so that there would be just kind of generic parts that you can use, and then there could be independent shops and people that could buy the same parts that Apple has right now.
Yeah, because right now it sounds like, again, just picking on Apple, they pretty much only release their parts to actual Apple stores. They don't release this to independent stores where they have to kind of Frankenstein together some repairs if they're trying to do something to your phone. But this bill would help with that, where these independent shops would actually get access to having these Apple products and even coming up with their own generics. Definitely like the idea of that, but unfortunately it looks like it's not going to be going anywhere during this legislative session. I was looking through Twitter and was kind of disheartened to see that there hasn't been many updates on this. The closest one I could find was from this past Monday, where this was from actually someone who had the handle, Right to Repair MN, where he said, the big manufacturers are pushing back, doing everything they can to prevent a vote on House File 1138. That's the Right to Repair bill. The next few days will be critical, and since there really hasn't been any news since Monday, probably not looking good on that. But here's another interesting aspect of this Right to Repair bill. Even though we are a progressive liberal station, it's not this issue of Right to Repair a left or right issue. In fact, last year, Senator Dave Ozmek, who's very much a conservative Republican, actually tried putting through this bill. It didn't end up going anywhere. So it's definitely not something that's a left versus right issue, but unfortunately not looking good. How about an update on this bill? This is, I know, something, Hunter, you've been following closely, and you talked a little bit about this yesterday, the opioid bill, which looks like it's still stuck in conference committee. Do you think there's any hope that something could be put together? I know your own state senator, Jensen, who is a very moderate Republican, has been trying to get this through, but what do you think the chances are on trying to get this opioid bill actually through conference committee and then, of course, signed by Governor Walz?
I mean, I was feeling a lot more pessimistic earlier in the week, but we're still not there. However, it's not completely stalled, and it's just a couple more compromises that need to be made, and this is a big priority for a lot of those people. So I'm hopeful, but it's a coin flip, honestly.
Yeah, and one of the holdups is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the pharmaceutical industry is not happy about getting taxed and having these taxes actually pay for opioid rehabilitation programs, for lack of a better way of putting it. That's one of the major holdups in this bill, is either having the tax itself or how much this tax would actually be.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And they're doing whatever they can to just stall it the next few days. So whatever they can do to distract legislators so that they don't get this worked out in the next 5 days, they're trying.
So they're not even trying necessarily to shoot down the bill, so to speak. They're just trying to punt it down so they don't have to actually take a vote on it. They can say, oh, well, we tried, but we just didn't have time to get to the bill.
Yeah, because, I mean, it passed so overwhelming in both houses. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't take it down that way. The only way they can is to just stall it. And they've been pretty successful at that, because this was about 7 weeks ago that it passed the Senate, which was the second.
7 weeks? That's how long? I thought that was the House it passed. It actually passed the Senate as well 7 weeks ago?
It was, yeah. They were right by each other, but it was at the beginning of April, so maybe 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Plenty of time to work something out, and I think lobbyists have something to say about that there, where they're trying to lobby these legislatures saying, well, you know, you don't necessarily have to vote against this bill, but at least try prevent it from coming to the full House and Senate floor once it's been reconciled in committee. So again, you can say, well, we're at least trying to get the bill passed, but nothing ends up happening. And the opioid crisis is not going away. So hopefully maybe we'll have some good news in the coming days, but I don't think, unfortunately, it's looking very good there. Another thing that's trying to work its way through a conference committee is a ban on gay conversion, quote, therapy. I use that around quotes because it's not actually therapy. And still no news on that, unfortunately, right now, on getting that very disgusting practice banned. So they're still working through that. What's interesting is that the leader of the Minnesota State Senate, that's Senator Paul Gazelka, actually has a very personal connection to this, being that he has a child who basically doesn't define themselves by traditional genders. And he's been kind of struggling with this as well. So we'll have to see where that ends up as well. But unfortunately, that looking like it's not going to be getting through the state legislature. And then there's also this election security. You remember this. Minnesota is the only state in the United States that has not taken a federal grant for election security money. The only state, the federal government basically appropriated an amount of money that could be distributed among the states that states could use to secure their elections to make sure there's no hacking. Unfortunately, it's still being held up in the state Senate by Senator Mary Kiffmeyer, who used to be our Secretary of State a number of years ago, because her logic is that we don't need the money because Russia is already hacking us anyways, which I don't get the logic of that at all. If Russia's hacking you already, I think you're already in some trouble. And as Matt was saying last hour, I mean, at least make it a little bit difficult for them to try to hack you. Don't just throw your hands in the air and say, well, they're already going to hack us anyway, so we might as well not do anything about it. So something else must be going on there. But that's at least what's happening at the state legislature. I'm going to follow along on Twitter once we head into the commercial break, see if we have any updates on negotiations. But the one thing that bugs me about these budget negotiations every year is that they always go to the very last second, and they were notorious for doing this when Kurt Dowd was the Republican Speaker of the Minnesota State House, where sometimes he was literally going like a half hour up to the deadline where he would finally come through with a bill that's like thousands of pages long, and they would only have a half hour to actually read this bill, which of course no one did, so you'd kind of have to take everyone's word saying that, well, I guess this bill is okay to be voted on. Something needs to be put into the Constitution or some kind of statute. Doug and I were talking about this the other day, where you have at least a week or maybe 2 weeks to have these bills actually read by the public. There should be a certain date where if a bill isn't passed by then, well, then you got to go to a special session, because we have to actually read what's in these bills. Because what happened back in 2011, I talked about this with Doug the other day, was that if you look at this funding for Minnesota Care, which comes through the medical device tax, which provides $700 million for funding for Minnesota Care, which helps get health care to low-income Minnesota. $700 million, it's funded through this provider tax, this 2% provider tax. It's set to expire at the end of 2019. It wasn't always like that. This was pretty much always set in place where it would always be there, but it was set to sunset in 2019 due to the fact that this was stuck in a bill way back in 2011 when, again, we were on the verge of it. Well, actually, we did go into a government shutdown in 2011, and just to get the government open, this got stuck into a bill that I don't think a lot of people caught, and that's the reason why we're having this issue now where Minnesota Care could potentially lose a whole bunch of funding simply because of something we missed in 2011 when we were trying to cram through a bill at the very last second. Do we have some news actually on that, though, in terms of that provider tax? The tax right now is set at 2%. It's set to go down to 0% by the end of the year. It looks like some of the sides have actually reached an agreement to have that to at least a 1% tax, which still wouldn't provide nearly enough funding, but I guess it would be better than 0%. But that's the latest word from the Capitol, is that it looks like both sides have agreed to maybe a 1% provider tax coming up in the future. All right, that's some of the news taking place at the state legislature. On the other side of the break, want to take a closer look at the census and then also preview the 2020 congressional elections in Minnesota, because heads up, they're going to be much different than they were in 2018. That's on the way next here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Brett and Hunter.
Hi, this is Candy from Green Tea Conversations, Sunday at 10 a.m., and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
The Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul is the perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Offering daily fresh seafood specials, fire-roasted meats, exquisite pizza, and half-price bottles of wine on Mondays and Tuesdays, except on Xcel Energy event nights. Once you experience their cozy fireside dining, extensive wine list, and bar, you'll be back for more. Gift certificates and private dining room for parties available. Located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking, or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
Here's six great reasons to join Sick of Salmon Shares. Truly wild, hook-and-line caught Alaskan fish the way it was meant to be. Community-focused, producer-owned by our Alaskan fishing families. Exceptional quality, sashimi-grade artisan-caught fish. Sustainable and traceable, back to the exact boat and fishermen who caught it. Convenient and affordable, delivered directly to your home with delicious recipes and a variety of membership levels, all 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Learn more at SITKASalmonShares.com and use code AM950 when you join.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Hunter Hawes. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 60. Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 82. And Friday, mostly cloudy with a high near 64.
The Green Home Doctor. 80% of homes in the market need help with air sealing and insulation. The Green Home Doctor will work with you to make your home less leaky and comfortable in both the winter and summer. They can help you get energy rebates from Xcel and CenterPoint. Find out more at greenhomedoctor.com. That's greenhomedr.com.
Hi there, this is Alan Miller speaking, the local and studio curmudgeon. You're listening to, and wisely so, Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
And it is Brett and Hunter hosting the Repartee today. By the way, you just heard Alan Miller a few seconds ago. He'll be filling in for Matt McNeil coming up on Monday when Matt has his colonoscopy, because I don't think we want Matt back in studio the same day he's having that procedure done. So we will get a little taste of the Alan Miller experience. I always enjoy having Alan in studio. Very popular with our listeners. Everyone loves it when Alan makes his way to the studio every once in a while. So he'll be in on Monday filling in for Matt McNeil. So I want to talk about the census, because in 2020, we, of course, are going to have another U.S. census where we figure out how many people are living in the country, where they're living, and so on and so on. Now, what's, of course, significant about the census, I know a lot of our listeners are aware of this already, is that after each census, we do redistricting, where the congressional lines and the state legislative lines get redrawn after the 10-year cycle of the census, which would be in this case after the 2020 elections. Now, what's significant about the census is that here in Minnesota, we currently have 8 congressional districts. But we could be on the verge of losing a congressional seat because Minnesota is not growing as fast as some of the other states around the country. Basically, most states around the country are actually seeing increases in population. I think there's a few that are actually losing population. I think Wyoming's one of them. But for the most part, like 45 or even more than that of the states are actually gaining population. But the problem is that Minnesota is not gaining population as fast as some of the Sunbelt states like Arizona, Texas, and Florida. In fact, after the 2010 census, we just barely made the cut of trying to keep our 8 congressional people. But now coming up in 2020, a little bit of a mixed bag as to whether we're going to be able to keep that congressional seat. But interestingly, and this is put out by the State Department on Economic Development in Minnesota, they say that because of lower birth rates, larger number of baby boomers retiring, and a surprising reason, not enough immigrants, that's the reason why Minnesota is potentially going to lose one of their congressional seats. Not enough immigration. However, there is one caveat with that, and that is if you've been following along, Donald Trump wants to put a birthright citizenship question on the next census. Now, some of the thinking I've been seeing on the Star Tribune, they wrote an article about this the other day, is that because Minnesota has a smaller population of new immigrants as compared to other states, we could actually possibly hang on to our Senate or hang on to our 8 congressional seats because these other states that have higher immigrant populations could actually have several immigrants that don't get counted because they would be fearful of filling out the census due to that legalization question that could be on the census after 2020. But either way, we're right on the verge of having 8 or 7 congressional seats. And speaking of that, with the state legislature, going back to some quick news there, the DFL House actually passed a bill that would require us to spend $2 million on trying to get a proper count of all the people here in the state of Minnesota, but it's gone nowhere in the Senate, which I find interesting because what's going to happen when we draw the next congressional and legislative boundaries is that they're drawn by whoever's in power. That would be the governor, the state House of Representatives, and the state Senate. Already, we are guaranteed to have a Democrat with a seat at the table after the 2020 election. That's because Governor Walz, who is a DFLer, was elected in 2018. And, of course, his term doesn't expire until 2022. So he's already guaranteed a seat at the table, which means there's no possibility for gerrymandering by Republicans. In fact, the reverse could end up happening where if the DFL were to take full control of the legislature, right now they already control the state house, and they could control the state Senate after the 2020 election, you could potentially have a Democratic gerrymander after 2020. So I'm not quite getting why Republicans are trying to not necessarily fund the census count here in the state of Minnesota, because overall it looks like it might hurt them, because if you have DFLers writing that, they could potentially maybe tip the scales a little bit more in their favor, where you could have more Democratic congressional districts as compared to Republicans. So little news there that census funding still out of debate here, the state legislature. And of course, with that immigration question and legalization question, that could also have an impact on the census. One more piece of news before we head to our break, and then our interview with Doug Patchett when he speaks to Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman about Temple Israel's Voices event coming up. I want to talk about the congressional races in 2020, because I find this kind of interesting as I looked back at some of the interviews we did back in 2017 and 2018. At this time, during the 2020 election cycle, because we're already there, in all 8 of our congressional districts, guess how many people who have announced to run, Hunter, that are challenging our representatives? How many do you think have declared that they're going to run for a congressional seat overall in the state, besides the incumbents?
So past runners in elections?
Yeah, how many candidates have announced that they're going to challenge an incumbent representative in 2020?
Two.
One.
Jason Lewis?
Nope, not him. It's actually the only person who has announced that they're going to run in 2020 is Dave Sandbeck, who is going to primary Betty McCollum in CD4.
Oh, wow.
So he's actually a DFLer. Now, the reason why I bring this up is that at this time in 2017, I was looking back at our archives when we had the old Mike McEntee show, because we would book interviews with all these candidates trying to get them on the air, get their thoughts on the issues. At this time in 2017, We had already done interviews with Dean Phillips and Angie Craig. Dean Phillips was running in CD3 at the time. Angie Craig was running in CD2. And in just a few months, in July of 2019, it'll be the two-year anniversary when we had Dan Feehan, who at the time was the CD1 candidate. So what I find interesting about this is that I don't think we're going to see anywhere near the amount of campaign spending that we saw in 2018 here in the state of Minnesota, because no one has really announced that they're challenging any incumbents, which kind of leads me to believe that the environment is pretty much set to favor incumbents in 2020, because usually if you have like a wave election on the way, you have challengers announcing very early that they're going to run for Congress. I think Dean Phillips was the first one to announce. I believe he announced in like March or April of 2017, which was more than a year and a half in advance. And now here we are in May of 2019, which is, again, about a year and a half away from Congress. And not only has pretty much no one, at least among mainstream candidates, except for this one guy, Dave Sandbeck, who I've never heard of before, no one's announced they're running for Congress, which, again, I find interesting. Maybe that means both parties, the DFL and the Republicans, aren't really very optimistic about being able to knock off any of the incumbents coming up in the 2020 election cycle. Because in 2018, outside groups spent $57 million. Overall, it was about $80 million when you include candidate spending. I don't even know if we're going to reach half of that coming up in 2020. Because you would think some of these districts would be very competitive, especially that Angie Craig and that Dean Phillips district. But no Republicans have announced they're going to challenge either of those. And conversely, for the DFLers, no one has announced that they're going to challenge either Jim Hagedorn in CD1 or Pete Stauber in CD8. So we'll have to see if we get any announcements in the coming weeks and months, because if not, I'm guessing both parties have probably given up on trying to flip any congressional seats here in the state of Minnesota. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, if you have thoughts on any of the topics we've been talking about, whether it's the negotiations at the state capitol, the census, or these 2020 congressional elections, love to give your thoughts. But in the meantime, we're going to take another time out, and on the other side of the break, we're going to get into Doug Padgett's conversation, again, with Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman, who's going to be hosting an event called Voices at Temple Israel, a conversation between Anna Navarro and Van Jones, who you've heard of on CNN. We'll get to that interview on the other side of the break here on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Brett and Hunter.
This is Jennifer Ogren, account executive at AM 950, and you're listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee?
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
No matter what your taste, you'll find the music you're looking for at the Electric Fetus. Pick from rock, pop, international, roots music, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Or create your own compilation of favorites with the exclusive Mix and Burn CD station, only available at the Electric Fetus. Dust off your vinyl or just make some space by turning your unwanted music into cash. The used selection changes daily, so check out the new arrivals often. 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Spring has sprung, and it's time for Standard Heating and Air Conditioning Spring Fever Sale, where you can save $1,700 or more on a new furnace and AC combo throughout May. We all love being outside in spring, but we have to come in sooner or later, hopefully later. And Standard will make sure you're ready. So find out more about Standard's Spring Fever Sale and how you can save $1,700 or more today at standardheatingdeals.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
You can't go through a day without hearing about healthcare reform. St. Paul Corner Drug is here to help you navigate the ever-changing healthcare landscape. We are your advocate in getting much-needed prescription medication covered under your insurance plan. Need to choose a different plan? There is no reason to feel like you are drowning in the system. St. Paul Corner Drug can make simple work out of finding you a plan that best suits your needs. You can rest assured at St. Paul Corner Drug, pharmacy the way it should be.
Hello, this is Andrew Yang, Democratic candidate for president, and you're listening to Minnesota Progressive Repartee.
And we are back on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee with Brett and Hunter on your Thursday afternoon. Right now, I want to go to an interview that Doug Padgett did, this interview with Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman. She is with Temple Israel, and they have an event coming up on Tuesday called Voices, which is a conversation between two national figures that have opposing viewpoints and how to kind of bridge the divide that we have here in this country. That event is going to be with Anna Navarro and Van Jones, who you've often seen on CNN. Let's go ahead and play that interview that Doug Padgett conducted right now.
All right, so Rabbi Zimmerman, tell me a bit about the Voices Ideas of Our Time event with Anna Navarro and Van Jones. It's happening Tuesday, May 21st, this coming Tuesday over at Temple Israel. It sounds really exciting.
Yes, it is very exciting. We have an annual event every year. It's called Voices. And we have heard voices such as Elie Wiesel and Paul Rusabagina, who was the Hotel Rwanda owner, the real Hotel Rwanda owner. And now we have, much like last year, where we brought David Axelrod and Ari Fleischer, literally two people from opposite sides of the political spectrum, to come and have a conversation. And last year was so wonderful that we decided to try and do that again. And so Anna Navarro and Van Jones are people who affiliate with opposite political parties and have their opposite perspectives, and we're hoping to have a civil conversation.
So how do you go about deciding what topics you're going to cover? I mean, obviously, Temple Israel is engaged in all kinds of good social engagements in and around the world. And how do you decide? Is this one particularly chosen because of its political angle and the election coming and the Trump administration and all?
I think it's just some insight into the world. People who have a 30,000 foot view of the world in a way that we don't. You know, we can all plug into the particular, you know, the particular news stream that we choose. And we wanted both news streams to be present and to have this conversation. I think it really is a way of finding a path out of sort of this polarized world that we live in, and to find kind of pathways to conversation about what we agree upon and what we disagree about.
So this is a sort of an all afternoon and into the evening event. The actual programming, because like it starts at 7:30, and but then before that, if people want to, they could, if they were a donor or they wanted to sponsor a dinner, they could come early. Would they have a chance to be around the guest presenters, Anna Navarro and Van Jones, if they are part of any of the earlier evening or hors d'oeuvre times at 6 o'clock?
Right. So the, you know, Anna Navarro and Van Jones will be at dinner, will be in dinner, will speak at dinner. So that's really the place that those who have invested in Temple, because, of course, this is a program to make sure that we have an investment in the work we do out in the world. And so they will be down there. And then, you know, the program itself, our hope is that everyone feels really close and feels very connected. So Sam Kaplan, who's the former ambassador to Morocco, is going to facilitate the conversation. And so we're eager to hear, as a diplomat, you again have a world view. And so he's bringing his perspective in the questions that he's asking our two guests. And it's going to be a conversation, actually. It's not going to kind of be an answer, you know, a question and answer. It's going to be a conversation about how we can hold on to hope in this world today.
Yeah, Rabbi Zimmerman, I would just love to ask you a little bit about that, too. I'm so glad you're hosting this event and so excited that Temple Israel makes it open to the public, because there's just not a lot of public spaces where people can have these conversations. You know, those of us who run religious communities, we have them often. But that can feel like people that it's inside of a, you know, it's inside of a more private or chosen religious community. And
right.
So people end up watching things on television or reading it on their phones or on their computers. And very rarely are we invited into these shared spaces.
Right.
Can you just talk a bit about why that's so important in this time and what you as a spiritual leader and community leader see as the value of a room full of people? You know, it can, for some people, they think, boy, that sounds awfully impersonal. I'm going to be in a room with hundreds of others. But there's something that really, really important that comes out of these collective times together.
Really does. It really does. I have to say that, you know, so often we live in bubbles. We, you know, the book, The Big Short, is sort of, you know, this, the, it's this idea that we live with people we agree with, we worship with people who look like us and we agree with, and that has been one of the polarizing realities of our time. Mm-hmm. And so Temple Israel is over 140 years old, and we have been in the city of Minneapolis from our inception, and we believe that our address is our mission and vision, and that reaching out to all and to the community and to the city of Minneapolis is our mission. And so the idea over our doors, over Emerson at Emerson Avenue, it says, "May this house be a house of prayer for all people." So it's the Isaiah quote that opens our doors. And that's very much what we work every day to do, not just in an episodic program like this that is high profile. So the idea is that we want to almost be witness to and participants with people who are in conversation. Because of how old we are, our longevity, we also span the spectrum of political perspectives and world perspectives, and that's our congregation. We aren't a homogeneous group. And so we really are trying through our strategic plan to find how to have community in this contentious time. And this is one example and one modeling of how to do that.
Yeah. And I know it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. Even though Temple Israel is hosting this, someone doesn't have to be a Jew, of course,
Jewish,
to come,
right.
Or they don't have to be interested in religion particularly.
No.
And in some ways, I think really maybe not even in politics. You know, I follow Anna Navarro and Van Jones both and what they do. And they both, I don't know what they're going to say here and how this particular conversation will be narrated. But they're both actually talking about what it means to live not only in our nation as a collective of people from different backgrounds, but also how we all should live in the world and how our nations should be engaging with one another. Do
exactly.
you have a sense of what their particular point is going to be that they're going to be making at this event on Tuesday, May 21st?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we want to hear their personal stories. They represent communities, a Latina woman and an African-American man, where the idea of how they represent not only the work they do, but how their road has made such a significant connection and impact on our world. And so we want to hear the narrative of them and their personal journeys. So that's a really important part, I think, of what we want as a part of the evening, because we, you know, as Jews, our journey always defines who we are, and our people's journey defines so much of who we are. So, and then just kind of a look at the world, what do they think are the issues of our time, and what are their perspectives on it? Where do they agree and where do they disagree? National platform and what they see happening nationally and what they see happening, locally as well. And so we're just going to get two people's insights into the world as a, as a touch point for all of us. We can disagree with both of them. You know, you can sit in the sanctuary and disagree with both of them. You could agree with one more than the other. That is the beauty of it. It doesn't ideas, if we can't bring ideas in a civic and civil conversation to the table, then we've really lost what it means to be an American, in my definition. You know, ideas are the hallmark of the vision of this country. And so I think having those ideas and being respectful is really an important part of the evening.
Well, it sure sounds exciting. It's wonderful. This is Rabbi Marcia Zimmerman. I just want to make sure we get all the details to people. It's
good.
This coming Tuesday.
Yes.
On May 21st. Doors will open at 7. The program itself will start at 7:30. The tickets are $50, which is really a great deal for something like this. And you can hang around afterward for an included dessert reception. And I see that on the website, there's also ticket pricing for students at $10.
Yeah.
Which seems like it could be really great for college students or graduate students.
Exactly. Or journalism students. They could really see. And you know, they're going fast. So just to let people know, we are selling tickets at a very fast rate, which is the success of the program.
Well, that's excellent. And they can find out all that information at the website for Temple Israel, which is templeisrael.com. And they can also find it at am950radio.com. We have a link to it there. So this is super exciting. I hope everybody checks their schedule. And if at all they're able to make it and rearrange some things, could be over there on Tuesday, May 21st for Temple Israel's Voices, Ideas of Our Time benefit event with Anna Navarro and Van Jones. So Rabbi Zimmerman, thanks again for this work and for sharing it with us today.
Thank you so much for covering it. We appreciate it.
You bet.
And again, that event is coming up this Tuesday. Make sure you get out there to Temple Israel. And we have more details about that event over at am950radio.com. I want to remind you today that programming is brought to you by Warner Stellion. They have their Big Grill Expo taking place this weekend, where you can experience the thrill of the grill at Warner Stellion's Grill Expo this weekend only. Enjoy tasty samples and the lowest grill prices of the year at Minnesota's Grill Headquarters, Warner Stellion. And might not be grilling weather this weekend. Man, it's supposed to be cold and rainy, but we're still going to be getting that grilling weather back. We've certainly had that over the past week or so here in the state of Minnesota. A couple other pieces of news and notes to pass along to you, and this is a follow-up on something Doug and I were talking about when we were hosting the Minnesota Progressive Repartee earlier this week. If you don't remember this, Doug was talking about this death row inmate by the name of Donnie Johnson, who is scheduled to be executed tonight in the state of Tennessee. He was convicted, I think, back in 1984 of killing his wife. There's basically no doubt he did it. He completely confessed to it. But he has really changed his life. He's been a Christian leader in that church. And tonight he is scheduled to be executed. And unfortunately, don't have very good news to report there, as the governor of Tennessee, Bill Lee, has denied his clemency. So not good news there. And we got into a little bit of a conversation about the death penalty earlier this week here on the Repartee. I just don't understand it. And unfortunately, it looks like we're going to have another person put to death tonight. That is Donnie Johnson in the state of Tennessee. So I know Doug got to know Donnie Johnson pretty well from talking to him over the years. So know it's going to be a tough time for him. So definitely send Doug some good vibes on that, as unfortunately clemency for Donnie was denied. Another quick note to pass along to you regarding the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. Doug is out of town all of next week, so it's going to be myself and Hunter hosting the Repartee. Hunter is doing Monday and Wednesdays. I'll be doing Tuesday and Thursday. And then we have a special best of show lined up on the Friday before Memorial Day. But that's all the time we have for today on the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is Brett and Hunter signing off, and we're not giving away any tote bags.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Progressive Repartee. This is the end of our program, or the Departee. You can listen to our show anytime at am950radio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.